In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to be talking about same old with the Chicago Bears, same old with the Blackhawks, same old with the Cubs, same old around Chicago. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is going on right now, and Christmas is coming up soon, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com. Get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, I'm going to start this off quickly by saying that I'm going to take partial responsibility for today.
You are.
I am. I am going to take partial responsibility. I saw that on Fanatics sports betting, they had plus 8,800 odds, Caleb Williams winning NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. And I put $100 down on it. That was the universe going, you are not going to get $8,800. Just go lament your loss of $100, and we're going to go make the Bears stink this weekend.
The only thing that I could think of is worse is getting involved in that Hawk Tua meme coin and losing your entire income to that.
Why on earth would people put money on a meme coin from Hawk Tua?
Well, I mean, that's kind of what I said. I mean, I'm just like, why would you think that's a good idea? I mean, it's like you get what you deserve, kind of, you're doing that. And I saw that. I'm like, yeah, society is screwed. So if you're betting on the Bears too to do good things, I guess, then that's equally as bad.
I knew the Bears would be bad. I just was hoping that with no Flus around to be an albatross around everybody, that Caleb, I was like, you know, his stats are pretty darn good. And if you take away the super hot start of Jaden Daniels, like they're neck and neck in numbers wise. I was like, okay, Caleb could do this. And no.
Yeah, that's a big NO right there. I mean, look, firing Matt Eberflus needed to happen. Absolutely needed to happen. But today's performance was so sad and pathetic. It was one of those performances where there's very little you can take away. Because as painful as the last six whatever losses were, you said, okay, you know, Caleb Williams and the offense started doing things. You could take away a number of things there. You know, you lost in absurd fashion, but there were things to take away. Today, there really wasn't. And sure, you know, Caleb Williams, he got his two touchdown passes. He had a completion percentage over 70%. But we were going into halftime with, what, four total yards of offense in the first half? I mean, today was one of those games where there was really no redeeming factor. I mean, you look at the last six whatever losses, whatever streak we're on now. I've already lost count of how many games in a row we've lost. But, you know, you could see those absurd losses. And as painful as they were, you could at least take away a number of things. Today was so sad and pathetic. It was so pathetic. And just, it beat you down to the point where you couldn't feel anything. It was like being dumped into the North Atlantic. I was just numb. I sat there saying, this is where I'm supposed to get mad. I'm not getting mad. I'm not throwing up my arms. I'm not yelling. I'm not ranting. I'm like frozen here. It's like I can't move anything. I don't feel anything. I'm like, why am I not mad? I should be mad, and I'm not, because they've sucked all the life out of us. this entire fan base is completely numb. Every fiber of our being is at a standstill because of how bad this is. And when they went out today and the 49ers were just having their way with them, they were throwing them around like rag dolls. They were getting so wide open, you wondered if they were even trying. Shout out to TJ Edwards. He had a good game, but pretty much everybody else. You saw Edmonds have a bad game. You saw Jack Sanborn have a bad game. You saw more struggles from Tyreek Stevenson. Yes. None of it was really good outside of the effort of TJ Edwards. And how many yards of offense did we have at halftime? 4, 6, whatever it was.
It was pathetically little.
It's like it defied possibility. It absolutely defied possibility. And all you saw was them not being able to establish a run and Caleb Williams getting bottled up on third down every single time in the first half. It was so numbing that you didn't feel anything past the first quarter because that's how bad it got right away. And frankly, that's what Detroit should have looked like. Detroit kind of kept us around a little bit, but today the 49ers came out guns a-blazin', who, by the way, are like, what, two-thirds banged up? Their offensive line is banged up. You don't have CMC. You don't have Nick Bosa. So many, and Deebo Samuel's out for the year. I mean, all those guys are hurt. And they came out looking like they were fully healthy, and they were just beating the everlasting crap out of you.
It was bad. It was bad. It was the only game of the NFL season where one team outgained the other by over 300 yards in the half. And by the end of the game, you know, the Bears closed that gap a little bit,
but it didn't matter
by like 15 yards. So they still got outgained by 290 yards, and the score was just is you're right. That's what the Lions should have been.
Right. Cause here we are looking at what's going on. And I, you know what? You can talk about Thomas Brown all you want. This is a guy who a few weeks ago wasn't even an offensive coordinator. He is being thrown into this fire, and it's a big ask for him. It's a very, very big ask for him to do this, especially going up against a top five, maybe even top three coach, probably a top three coach in the NFL in Shanahan, who we would die to have. But there's one very obvious thing here. Flus may be gone, and he should have been gone. Yeah, and not only is the stink still there, but you see how flawed this team is. And that's when you start to look at Ryan Poles. Ryan Poles, who talked about beating you in the trenches, you are getting beaten in the trenches week after week. And even against a fourth string unit, even at points for the offensive line on the 49ers, they still beat you to a pulp. They still absolutely beat you to a pulp. It wasn't even close. They were playing flag football against you. And there's a very, very notable stat. I don't know if you saw this, but I'm going to read this to you right now. This was tweeted out by Mark Potash. And this wasn't even before the game was over. He said, the Bears have allowed the following pass plays. 23 yards, 33 yards, 30 yards, 32 yards, 37 yards, 23 yards, 16 yards, which was a touchdown, 32 yards, and 39 yards. They weren't just gaining on you. They weren't dinking and dunking you to death. They were just eating massive hunks out of you. And we saw that problem with the defense all year. But this time, you weren't playing the bend don't break that you've been playing all year. You were just getting completely kicked in.
And yeah, it's this defense. And I want to say this is Matt Eberflus 1000% should have been fired after last season. So whenever he got fired this season was beyond late. But all of those players that came out and were talking about, you know, they were mad and they wanted him fired and all, which one of them stepped up today?
outside of TJ Edwards. Couldn't say a single one.
So it's frustrating because that's when you're supposed to step up and be like, hey, listen, now the accountability is on us. Matt dragged us down, but now we've got to be put our big boy pants on and go out there and play this game. And this was possibly the only game left on the season that you could have won. I mean, I guess you can win any week, but this was your biggest, best chance to win a game the rest of the season. And you lost. And not only you lost, you got your teeth kicked in.
It was, honestly, that first half was the worst first half, I think, of the Ryan Poles era.
And it has been this whole season, the Bears just don't show up in the first half. And a team came through and pounded it down your throat and made it so the game was over by the time you started that second half. The Bears played a lot better. The offense just does nothing in the first half, and the defense gives up big yards. And I don't know what it is. I don't know why nobody's prepared.
Why are they so soft in coverage? Why are they just letting guys get so wide open?
And I hated when the announcers were like, well, the Bears are letting these pass plays happen because they're gearing up to stop the run. They didn't stop the run either.
No.
They don't get enough pressure. Montez Sweat, I don't think, is healthy. He has not, the second half of this season, he has just been almost invisible. And the whole defense changes its tone when you can't get pressure. And he's the only pressure you can get on the edge. And I'm going to say this, and it might not be popular. I think the Bears' first pick, I mean, it depends on how the draft plays out and, you know, who's available. But I think the biggest priority in that first round is going to be edge rusher. People, I don't think, want to hear that. I think you can use those 2 second-round picks for a guard and a center and get arguably the best guard and center in the draft. But you've got to get an impact edge rusher. Just have
you absolutely do. I mean, no matter where you draft it or how you sign it, how you acquire, whether it's draft, trade, whatever, you're right about that. You have to get that. Because you know what was really noticeable? It was the first down conversion of the game on the first drive for the 49ers. So it was third down. Brock Purdy could have taken out a folding chair and sat down with a newspaper and still would have gone untouched on that third down play. And he hooked up. I can't remember who it was with, but they hooked up for a big gain and they went to midfield. And then it was just off to the races from there. That first drive was an indicator right there that your lack of pass rush is a problem. Speaking of pass rush, how fitting was it that Leonard Floyd got a sack today against Caleb Williams? I didn't even know he was still playing.
Yeah, 2 sacks.
Oh, that's right, he did.
That makes it worse. I forgot that he existed, and here he comes. And I'm going to tell you is, I keep hearing a lot of people being like, Caleb Williams, the sacks are on him. He's holding on to the ball too long. Number one, no, he's not. He's taking less sacks when he's getting the ball out like ridiculously quick, like 2.2 seconds. But I don't know what the problem is that when you throw those quick ones, you're not going deep at all. And the receivers have to get open. And in this offense, guys aren't, their scheme isn't getting guys open. It's guys getting themselves open that's getting them open. If you watch Shanahan or McVay or what's his nuts in Minnesota or
Kevin O'Connell.
And if you look at
Matt LaFleur, yep.
Matt LaFleur especially, just watch. I could go out there and be a route runner in that system and have a 5 yards of separation. Like they're scheming guys open, and the Bears offense just doesn't do that. And I don't know what part of that is you can a tribute to Thomas Brown because it's not his system. It is a system that was already there from Shane Waldron that he is just calling plays from the playbook. So that's the hard part, you know, with Thomas Brown, because this guy in a 17-day span went from passing game coordinator to offensive coordinator to interim head coach. And he's being judged on partially on how he's calling plays from another person's playbook that doesn't have a job that's sitting at home.
Well, and that's one thing to remember too, is that the playbook did not change. Like, the way they call it, the way they approach it can change, but the playbook doesn't change.
Nope. He is just the sequencing within the playbook is the only thing different. And so it's hard to know where to judge Thomas Brown. But the blaming Caleb Williams, oh, he's holding on to the ball too long. If you watch the all 22 and you go, oh, this guy's wide open, pause it. Pause it right when you identify that guy is wide open. And then look what Caleb's doing. He's ducking underneath a guy trying to tear his head off. And there's no pocket to step up in. Is watch big time NFL quarterbacks is when they avoid the rush and make these big plays, they step up into the pocket. We have Coleman Shelton, who is just an absolute, I don't want to say he's a turnstile. I want to say he is just a wet sponge, and there's no pocket. There's no pocket to step up in. It is a steel barrier of a defensive lineman, and there's nowhere to step up. That's why Caleb has to duck and then try to roll out to his right or left. And so you can't say, oh, now he's open, because you can't throw the ball in that. And I still think Caleb has a lot of footwork issues to work on, but it's hard to judge him when he is just getting annihilated. And it was one play where the edge rusher just did a double stunt in and went right into the center, and Coleman Shelton just watched the guy go by. Didn't do anything. Didn't even slow him down. Just watched him go by. And you're like, how? How can people still defend Coleman Shelton? They're like, well, he hasn't been terrible the last 4 weeks. Like, yeah, he has. He has just been not noticeably terrible because the Bears have been getting out so quick that he hasn't had a chance to be terrible. But nobody's getting open, and everything with this offense has to be so short and underneath because you don't get enough time for him to throw it deep. And it sucks. It sucks so hard.
I mean, you see mess after mess out there, and you watch today too. You know, I mentioned how obviously you couldn't get a run game going, and I was hoping that they could at least do that because of how banged up the 49ers personnel was. You try to get the run game going, it makes things easier. Also, you watch in the first half how when Caleb Williams was dropping back, it was just spelling disaster, and I wish they could have rolled him out a little bit more and see what you could do there, because, you know, we've seen him use his legs pretty efficiently, you know, early on in games and even later in games too. So when you weren't getting things working, you kind of want to switch up a little bit, and it just didn't feel like they were. He was getting annihilated on the backdrops. You weren't going anywhere. And you know, the other thing that sucks too is you watch the offensive line play, and Darnell Wright actually had a pretty good game today, but boy, Braxton Jones today was woof.
Yeah. It's so tough. It's so tough to just watch this, and you know, you're seeing the wide receivers finally start to look good, and in the second half, and you see Rome Odunze with that awesome touchdown and all of the jokes that he took in the preseason when he caught that touchdown that was out of bounds because the lines weren't all painted in. this was the ultimate redemption for that because he caught that ball and not only got his toes down, just double checked that they were down before going out of bounds. And it was great. And the other touchdown he caught was that route was so sweet. That was such a nice route. And I'm excited for, I can't imagine what Ben Johnson would be able to do with these two. And Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze, the connection.
Boy. And I just don't think he's going to come here.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a minute. But the second half, the Bears offense did some really good things. The fumble was unfortunate. But other than that, I think the offense did some good things. I
I mean, the
just think,
Rome connection looks,
yeah, you're starting to see, the DJ Moore connection look good. The Roma connections look good. You're seeing a complete turnaround from Keenan Allen. So you're like, okay, all right, there's some good pieces here. But we've got to start with the trenches, both sides, both sides.
Yes. That's going
And
to cost draft picks. It's going to cost money, and you have to use it, and you have both.
yeah, you have both. You've got to use it. You've got to. And I've been in the, I don't think you've been in the camp that I have for a bit, but I'm firmly in the Ryan Poles needs to be fired camp because.
I'm starting to go under his seat and blow on that fire to increase it, so to speak.
Now, if you were to tell me, like, okay, he solved the, or he at least mostly solved, I mean, because you're not going to build rebuild Rome in a day. But if you had told me that he really did a number and patched that offensive lineup to protect his rookie quarterback, and he did it to the detriment of the defensive line, I can live with that. Because you're like, okay, he kept us in the cap situation. He kept the draft pick, our draft capital good, and he fixed the offensive line. I can get, because that's what's most important is developing your rookie quarterback. But he didn't develop the offensive line. He didn't develop the defensive line. And, successful teams have. They start in the trenches. Look what the Eagles do. Look what the Eagles do all the time. Oh, first round, what'd you do? Did you draft an offensive lineman or defensive lineman? Yes. It's what they do. It's what they do. When the Cowboys were most successful, what'd they do? They drafted offensive linemen. It wasn't sexy. It wasn't exciting. But you know what? It's when you get a no-name running back going 6 yards before he's touched, then you're like, I like that. That's good. And the Bears just don't have that. So you've had two offensive, you hired the wrong head coach. You hired arguably the worst head coach in either of our lifetimes. You hired two terrible offensive coordinators. Because you had your hand in both of those, Ryan Poles. You hired two terrible offensive coordinators. You entrusted this, by the grace of God draft pick that you got, and Caleb Williams, and you entrusted him with a offensive coordinator that's so bad, he made half the season. He got fired halfway through his first season.
And we realize how hard it is to do that.
It's hard. And then, so you entrusted this man with your rookie quarterback and you didn't give him a new offensive line. There's so many fireable offenses there at that, and I can't help. I know Kevin Warren said that his job is safe, but you can't watch that press conference where Ryan Poles sat there like, you know what he looked like? When a kid gets in bad trouble at school and his dad has to come down talk to the principal. He looked like the kid that's sitting there having the principal tell his dad all the bad things he did, and the dad just seething. And Ryan Poles is sitting there like, oh man, oh man.
Yeah, we need to talk about that press conference because there's a lot there. And
And it's going to tie into something we're going to talk about a little bit after that, too.
yes. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot there, and there also wasn't a lot there in a way. I mean, they did not drag that press conference on very long. They cut it off pretty quickly, but I can't say installed any confidence in me. I really, really don't. And
No.
listen, my expectations for Bears press conferences are very, very low to begin with. But like you said, Ryan Poles looked like he was completely just defeated and embarrassed. And truth be told, I think that he realized very quickly into all this that he effed up pining to keep Matt Eberflus. And we can understand that it was kind of an arranged marriage when they hired him, but you had the chance to move on and find another head coach this offseason, and you didn't. You stuck
I
with it.
wanna, I want, I have a question, and I don't know the answer to this, and I don't
Yes.
think any of us do. Did George veto the firing Matt Eberflus after last season?
I think he did this season when they wanted to. Last season, I
Because
wasn't even.
we're getting a lot of conflicting things that are
We
coming up.
are. We
It's
are.
one, the Bears reached out to Jim Harbaugh, and Jim Harbaugh wasn't interested, or they never reached out to Jim Harbaugh. That Ryan Poles did want to fire Matt Eberflus after last season, but McCaskey told him no. But that never happened. Ryan wanted him and fought for him. Like, they're just diametrically opposed, like, statements, and they're all coming from people who, in theory, should. It's not like, oh, Joe Schmo, Bears fan 69 54 22 on Twitter. No, it's like you've got David Kaplan, you've got DeBears blog, who up until Sweaty Teddy left had probably the best source in that building, and I don't know who it is, but he had sources in there. You had Hub Arkish, you had David Haw, you have like people that have been doing this a long time that have
Sears S
connections.
Tower.
You have people that are just like, hey, these things are happening. And then you're like, but wait, those are the opposite things. Those can't both happen at the same time. Those are opposite things. And so I don't know what's really happening. There's so much confusion. And the only thing that makes sense is that there's a lot of confusion with the Bears organization.
Yeah, I mean, there really is no one storyline that seems to line up. This is just me guessing, okay? I don't have sources. I don't know anything. This is just my guess, is that last year, Ryan Poles and George McCaskey pined to keep Matt Eberflus. I think that there was enough for me to believe that Ryan Poles wanted to keep Matt Eberflus. Maybe Kevin Warren didn't. But you weren't going to twist George's arm to try to fire somebody. I mean, it's if Ryan Poles believed in him, then George McCaskey believes in him. I mean, if they sign him to a 5-year deal, imagine George McCaskey paying for 3 more years. Now, going into this season, I really think that the fallout of the Hail Mary quickly made Ryan Poles realize that Matt Eberflus was not the right guy for the job. And that it wasn't registering with the McCaskies because they didn't want to do it. Now, here's another thing. It seemed all but done after the Patriots game. I mean, really, the Hail Mary should have been the final straw, but the Patriots game, you'd lost the Hail Mary game, you got killed by the Cardinals, and then you had that embarrassment at home against the Patriots. Warren and Poles had to be done with them. They wanted to move on, but ownership said no. And here's my other question, too, in all this. We address ownership as George, right? George McCaskey. He's the chairman of the team. Now, we talked about this on the show before, but you know who the board of directors are made up of, right?
Yeah, 100-year-old. George, I think, is the youngest person on the board.
Right.
It's all old people that most of them are named McCaskey.
Exactly. So we put it on George because he's the face of the McCaskey family now. Virginia's 100 whatever years old. She just wears her fur coats and attends mass and all that stuff. But what are these meetings like with the board, with his family? Is it George going forward with all of this? Or is his family members pushing back on a few things that maybe we don't realize? Like, is it possible, I'm just asking here, is it possible that maybe George McCaskey would be a bit more on board with what Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren wanted to do regarding Matt Eberflus, but the other McCaskeys said no? I don't know the answer. And you know why I asked this, Sean? Is because this all ties back to the press conference. Because we had to play our favorite game. You know what our favorite game is, right? When asked about the head coaching search, we know what the favorite game is. Who's in charge? And did we get a clear answer, Sean? Did we?
No.
No. No, we didn't. So why should I believe there's any clarity with the ownership when there's no clarity about who your GM is going to pick? Is it going to be headed up by Kevin Warren? Is it going to be headed up by Ryan Poles? Is there going to be a search committee? They didn't give you a clear answer. Because if there was a clear answer, and if there was a logical answer, the second that question was asked, Kevin Warren would have said, Ryan Poles is our GM, the buck stops there at football, it's his hire. That's what you do in a logical setting. But it's not. It's the Bears. It's not logical.
It's not. It's not logical at all. And I don't know how to even just describe this. And I pulled up who the board is, and it is Virginia McCaskey, who is literally weeks away. We're like 3 weeks away from her turning 102.
Mm-hmm.
102. George McCaskey himself, Kevin Warren, Patrick McCaskey, Brian McCaskey, Ed McCaskey Jr., and Pat Ryan. I don't know what happened to Andrew McKenna, who is the other minority owner of the Bears. So Ryan and McKenna they each own 10% of the Bears. I don't know what happened to Andrew McKenna. He was on the board.
Wasn't he an older guy too?
He's 93.
Okay, so maybe he's quote retired.
Maybe. So, like, who on the it is? So the wild part is Kevin Warren is on the board, but is he gonna vote to fire his boss? Like, how does things get made? There's so much incest going on in the hierarchy there. It's Ryan Poles was supposed to report directly to George McCaskey, but then they just at some moment they brought in a president after they already hired their GM, and then quietly the GM now reports to the president and CEO, and that who reports to the chairman of the board, who the president and CEO is also on the board, but you know the main member of the board is the chairman of the board's mom, and his brothers are the other board members. Like, Why can't you get a board of directors with somebody that's not 200 that knows something?
What's the combined age of that board of directors?
Let's see. There's one, two, three, four, five, six, seven members. I'm going to put 600.
I picture them all coming together for a board meeting in like some old jalopy. You got the big exhaust fumes coming out the
They're all the men are wearing those hats that are circles with the flat tops.
was just thinking that too. It's like a Three Stooges skit.
Oh my God.
Sean, the Chicago Bears might be the most out of touch franchise in professional sports. I contrast that with the Theo Epstein era Cubs, when it was a brain trust of young, sharp minds, forward thinking, rebuilding something from the ground up. And Theo Epstein, unlike 99% of Chicago sports executives and owners, knew how to speak to the public and was transparent and was confident and was smart and in touch with what was going on. And the second he became out of touch, he said, "My time's done." He knew when to move on. But here we are with just this group of just ancient people, and it's not to be ageist, but the owner is 102. I mean, you got people on the board who have been here well before President Kennedy was even president, that they've been living on this earth. And we go through the same shit. Like, I would love to be a fly on the wall and see how that goes. So, if you hire a president and CEO, and yet he's on this board, and you make these decisions with team operations on this board, why would you just hire a president if he doesn't, and a CEO, president and CEO, chief executive officer? I mean, Kevin Warren has been very disappointing so far. Very, very, very disappointing. But at least, couldn't they just establish some hierarchy and say, sit down with the McCaskey family and say, listen, you hired Kevin Warren. Let's say I'm Kevin Warren. You hired me to be your president and CEO. If Ryan and I are on the same page about directions we need to go to, then let us make those decisions. You could just own the team, reap the benefits, go to NFL owners' meetings, go around on your little scooter, draw with your purple crayon, draw grimacing grapes, drink some purple Kool-Aid, whatever. Just do what you do there and let us make the decisions for the team. Because if we don't have the power to do that, why would you hire a president and CEO? Am I taking crazy pills or does that not make sense?
Anything the Bears do is stupid. Just, there's no talking sense into it.
No, there's not. And there's one other thing I want to point out about the hierarchy of this team. If you want Kevin Warren to be there side by side with Ryan Poles in these coaching interviews, that's reasonable, right?
Yeah.
But who do you want? I mean, I don't have full trust in anybody to make the decision. I mean, Ryan Poles is starting to have me ask major questions with him, but I do feel like if you put a gun to my head and say, who would you trust to hire a head coach, George McCaskey, Kevin Warren, or Ryan Poles? I'd say Ryan Poles because he's been involved with the game of football. And I mean the game of football, not the business of football, the game of football. And he might not even be great at making that decision, But at least I would trust that more than the McCaskey family, who would probably just call their good friends Bill Polian and Ernie Nicorsi in year 2025.
Old Ernie Nicorsi. Oh my God.
Because Ernie Nicorsi, that was the John Fox hire, wasn't it?
That was John Fox and Ryan Pace.
Yes. Because wasn't Ernie Nicorsi like, oh, you need to hire like an old, you know, experienced person, and you need to do this.
If you're hiring a young GM, you have to have an old head coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was his takeaway.
And listen, Ernie Nicorsi was a successful GM back in the day, and he was involved in the drafting of Eli Manning with the New York Giants. But how long ago was that? Two plus decades ago?
It was a while.
So, and that's the thing. In the game of football, you can be washed up real quick. And that is not just on the field of play. Like, listen, how many former head coaches have small advisor roles now because while they still have football knowledge, they've run their course in the game of football? Like, think about how many coaches we've gone through over the years. It's kind of like relievers in baseball. There's the, you know, you have some short shelf lives, even if you have all the knowledge in the world, and there's those few outliers, like the Andy Reids and the Bill Belichicks and the Mike Tomlins, who just last a really long time. Like, that's a dime a dozen. But you've had so many coaches who've had good stretches whose shelf life expires. I mean, we saw it with guys like Jim Caldwell, or even John Fox is a good example. I mean, that's just to list a few guys. Brad Childress is another example. You can look and see head coaches who've had success for a time. Lovie Smith, there's another one. They have their shelf life, they have their prime, and then they kind of just, the game kind of passes through them. So don't reach out to 80-some-year-old Bill Polian or 78-year-old, however old Ernie Nicorsi is, and try to find a solution in the late 2010s, early 2020s.
So it brings me a little bit here. So we had the press conference where they just looked like a clown show, and you saw the three McCaskey brothers sitting in a chair looking like dumb, dumb and dumber.
Mo, Larry, and Curly.
And it just was just in shambles. Nobody knows who's in charge. And obviously the sexiest candidate that's going to be available for a potential head coach this coming cycle is Ben Johnson,
mm-hmm.
who has been the best offensive coordinator for the last 3 years. And I know there's been a lot of people that are like, wow, it's just hiring Matt Nagy part two. Here's the thing. Matt Nagy called plays for like 2 weeks in Andy Reid's system. Ben Johnson has called plays for 3 years in Ben Johnson's system. So it's a way bigger, you know, situation. It's just a completely different situation. So Ben Johnson is the name. Right.
Yes, that's the hot name of the year. Yes.
So, he has been very fickle. There's been two cycles now where he has been courted by teams trying to sign him, which makes sense because he was the hot offensive coordinator. He turned teams down. Just flat out, two straight seasons. Turned teams down and went back to Detroit with no extra compensation. Like, Detroit didn't go, if you stay, we'll give you more money. He went back to the same contract that he had been under. Nothing new. He just didn't feel it was the right situation for him. And the rumor is that he was very interested in the Bears job, but it didn't open up. So we fast forward, and coincidentally enough, after Matt Eberflus is fired, Ben Johnson through some sources. I didn't hear him say it specifically, but it was said that when he this off season is if he takes a interview, it's only going to be if he is serious about taking the job. And he's going to want to make sure that he is aligned with the general manager, and he wants to talk to ownership to get them to acknowledge where they've made mistakes and what they're going to do to fix them. And I know some Bears fans are really upset by this, and I don't understand why.
I don't blame him.
It's exactly what I would do.
I would too.
Why would you want to go to a job where you're like, okay, well, they just fired somebody right after they hired him, like shortly after they hired him. Why? What happened? And how, why? I need to know. I don't want to go to a dysfunctional place and have my reputation aligned with this. I want to go somewhere where I can win.
It's upsetting as a Bears fan, but I can't be mad at him for doing that. It sounds smart to me.
Yeah, it's absolutely smart.
That's why my hopes aren't all that high for him to come here.
So, what are the odds? So you look at the three things. So if he's going to take an interview, it means he's serious. I think he would love to coach Caleb Williams. And you've got offensive weapons. Like those, he's got tools for him to work with and make this offense good. I think those would be exciting for him. But is he going to be aligned with the general manager? I don't know.
No.
How safe is the general manager? That's got to play a factor in it too. So if he doesn't feel that that general manager's safe, why is he going to want to be here? So
That seat's going to be warm regardless.
yes, regardless of what anybody says, that seat's got to be warm. And then the third thing is, what are the odds that George McCaskey is willing to meet with a head coaching candidate and be like, yeah, here's where I messed up, and here's what I'm going to do to fix it? 0% chance that happens.
Yeah. It'll be a cold day in hell when that happens.
Right?
But hey, see my purple crane and my scooter.
So I can't find the age of Edward McCaskey Jr., but the other one, two, three, four, the other six board members have a combined age of 457 years,
Oh my goodness.
which means the average age is over 76 years old.
Yeah, well, yeah. When you got a 9-year-old board member in Virginia who's over 100.
The average age is over 76 years old.
Help us.
And let's see. And the median age seems to be 68 years old. That's why is everybody so old?
Because
Why do they all have to be McCaskies?
we're cursed with this.
When I heard that, all I could think of is just, oh yeah, well, Ben Johnson's not going to be there. And the good news is that Bill Belichick seems to be out, because I think that would just be a complete disaster, and I don't think the Bears would do that. I can't, can you imagine Bill Belichick and George McCaskey getting along?
He wouldn't want the job.
No, I don't
He
think he
wouldn't
would.
want to come here.
I don't think he would, and I don't think he would do well. It would just be a disaster. He wouldn't want to be here. He wouldn't do well, and you would just see, it would just be a complete travesty. And I know a lot of people are Mike Vrabel. I don't. The last ownership fired Mike Vrabel because he didn't get along with ownership. Like, sure, he was struggling, but there were reasons. Like, they didn't give him a quarterback. He didn't have a quarterback. He won with Ryan Tannehill. And when Ryan Tannehill was gone, this he plummeted. So they didn't give him a lot to work with, but he didn't get along with ownership. That's plain and simple. So that means you're not getting Bill Belichick's not coming. They're not hiring Mike Vrabel because if they think Jim Harbaugh would be tough to deal with ownership, Vrabel might be worse. So you're not getting either of those. Ben Johnson's probably not coming here because you'd have to have ownership and not acknowledge their part in the failure of this organization.
We can hope and pray, but I just don't think the chances are overly high.
Yeah. And Thomas Brown seems like a really nice guy, and maybe at some point he could be head coach. I'm not seeing it right now. But that seems like a type of Bears hire.
I have a name who I think could be pretty likely for the Bears.
Oh
Can
man.
you guess what it is?
Don't say the head coach of Notre Dame.
No.
Don't say the head coach of Northwestern.
No. No college coaches.
Oh, okay. All right. I would see.
And let me just say that this name, I don't think would be the best choice, nor do I think it would be completely terrible either.
Are you going to say Joe Brady?
No.
Are you going to
And
say
I'm also I'm not going to say Cliff Kingsbury either.
Liam Cohen?
No.
Who?
Brian Flores. What have they said about what they're
Leader of
looking for in a
men.
next coach, in a next coach?
Leader of men,
Leader of men.
which is the stupidest thing you can say. Like, because, yeah, that every single person you interview should be a leader of men.
If you're not a leader of men, you're not a head coach.
Like, stop with the stupid shit. I think I understand what they're trying to say is that they don't want somebody that's just because they're an offensive guy or a defensive guy. They want somebody that's going to be a leader. But you know what is that's not quite the way the league works anymore. Mike Tomlin, leader of men. Yes. Lovie Smith was a leader of men. It didn't work out.
But he wasn't an alpha. That's the thing.
But did they say alpha?
No, they don't want an alpha. That's my whole point.
Yeah. They really do want Lovey. They want a clone of Lovey is what they want. Somebody that is like you don't lose the locker room, you don't be an embarrassment, and you like him as a person. Like Lovey, they want Lovey Smith.
Right. And
And I love Lovey, but you know what? He just like Lovey needed a more powerful GM that was going to be like, listen, I'm giving you an offensive coordinator. I'm choosing because it was and choose somebody good. Like they just kept saddling him with whoever, and he was fine with it. And he was fine to be a glorified defensive coordinator. But you know, Lovey was a great guy and was the last solid Bears head coach.
Yep.
But that's who they want. They want Lovey Smith. Get them to be not an embarrassment. Have fans like him. They like him. No kind of public, you know, goofs or gaffes. And not lose the locker room. Like they want Lovie Smith. That's God, that's scary. Like, shoot for the stars. Shoot for the stars.
They don't want to. They fall in. They and pretty much every Chicago team would rather fall in love with traits than confidence.
Like, I forgot who said it. One of the Chicago sportscasters was saying when it was when they were before the draft, we didn't know what the Bears were going to do before they traded Justin Fields. And they were like, you've got to aim high. You've got to shoot for the stars. Caleb Williams has a much higher ceiling. You've got to do that. And Danny Parkins said it. And they do have to do with the head coach too, is you've got to find somebody that you look at them and you're like, this is the person. This is the person. I don't care about, like, oh, they're fun to hang out with, and they collect stamps like I do, and their favorite color is purple, and they drive an 87 Buick Skylark, and they didn't want to upgrade cars, like I whatever dumb thing. I want somebody, when you look at them, you feel confidence that they are going to be the one that takes this team to the next level.
And I don't believe that they're going to have the right process. The only thing I could hope for is that they accidentally hire the right guy, that they accidentally make the right pick, because I don't trust their process, their thought process behind any of this. When you have a team with a history of not being able to get this right, and where every press conference they have, they make it clear they haven't learned anything, even though they want to give the illusion that they have, they haven't. They haven't. It's going to devolve to the same old shit.
Yeah, and here's the thing is, if it's solely the coach, then sure, you could luck into it and have it work out. The problem is that in the NFL, it's been pretty much established that you need the alignment of ownership, front office, head coach, and quarterback. You need that alignment to have lasting success. You have that in San Francisco. You have that in Kansas City. You have that in Buffalo. You have that in Detroit. You have that in Green Bay. And it's seeming like you're getting that in Minnesota. These are the teams that are winning. Where you don't have that alignment is Chicago, Carolina, Jacksonville, Cleveland. Those are the places you have the misalignment, and those are the dysfunctional teams that are embarrassments week in and week out that can't seem to get it right. And, do we feel, I think as Bears fans, we have some of that formula figured out. I think we have the quarterback. But I don't think we don't have a head coach, period. We don't feel confident with our general manager. And we definitely don't feel confidence with our ownership. Now, ownership could take that out of the way by just stepping out of the way, getting just be like, hands off. I'm hands off and truly mean it. But they don't. They
And they
don't.
might say they are, but they're not.
They're
And
tinkerers.
right, because they still want whoever is brought in to live by the McCaskey code of conduct.
And they've just got to stop it. They have to stop it. And they got to stop being McCaskies and start being Hallises. Like they got to stop the dumb shittery that they do.
Been saying that for years, man. And there's this small delusion that I think that they're going to finally learn. And then I realize, no, they're not going
No,
to.
they don't learn. They
They
never
didn't
learn.
learn after Trestman. They didn't learn after Fox. After learn after Nagy. And sure, Matt Nagy at least made sense as a hire, but they devolved back after Matt Nagy to saying, oh, we got to reach out to our old buddies. They reach out to Bill Polian. Yeah. Why aren't you picking the brains of top current minds in the NFL? Why aren't you talking to Peyton Manning? Why aren't you talking to other coaches that are kind of in the ether? You got to do your due diligence and you got to pick the brains of as many people as possible. We talked about this on our last show. And that's what I'm hoping that Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles do, and not having any involvement with any committees that are put together by the board who are going to tell you to talk to Ernie Accorsi or Bill Polian or some other old fart that hasn't been in an executive role in 10 plus years.
Yeah, you like, I want to look through the Ernie Accorsi and Bill Polian Rolodex and be like, oh, hey, dead, 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 200, 300, dead, dead. Like, it is just some dusty old crypt keepers.
This guy here is dead. Cross him off then.
I just am so tired of it. And Ben Johnson sees, like, this might just be my wishful thinking and my reading into things. I think Ben Johnson would like this job, but he's basically telling the McCaskies through the media, you better back off and let me coach this team and give me a GM that's not going to get in my way, that's going to help me, not hurt me. And I just don't see it happening. But I salivate thinking about, can you imagine getting a semi-decent offensive line and having the Ben Johnson offense with Caleb Williams, Rome Odunze, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet?
Yeah, sounds nice, doesn't it? Too bad everything that's nice is in a fantasy world for us.
We're gonna get the type of guy we're gonna get. We're either gonna keep Thomas Brown, or we're gonna hire one of those offensive coordinators that we interviewed for the Shane Waldron job that we didn't hire.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny. Look at the names that people are floating around, and several of them the Bears interviewed for the Shane Waldron job and passed them up for Shane Waldron. But I mean, one of my questions would be, if I'm Ben Johnson, is not only to George, it is to Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles. What was your process in hiring Shane Waldron? And why was it a bad one? Because you made a bad decision. Why was it a bad one? Like, that my question wouldn't just be to ownership. It would be to the front office. Like, you clearly messed up multiple times in multiple manners. And this has to get resolved to be a winning program. Like, Ben Johnson clearly recognizes what I said, that you need quarterback, coach, front office and ownership aligned to be sustained success. And he recognizes that. And if you can't change ownership easily, but if you can convince them that they're dumb and to get out of the way, and you've got your quarterback and your GM is halfway decent, then, you know, you've got a shot. Like, Ben Johnson doesn't want to come here to be a loser.
No. And you know what? Maybe, just maybe, if Ben Johnson goes out And he has this, I don't want to call him list of demands because it makes it sound a little pretentious, but he kind of has what he's looking for. He's trying to convince you that in order for him to do his job, he needs the following conditions in order to do it properly. Could I see him being able to sway Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren? Yes, absolutely. I think as critical as we are of Ryan Poles, I think he would move heaven and earth to have a coach like that. It's getting past ownership. That's the problem for me.
I'm just tired. Tired of the dipshittery. They've got to do something different. Everything they've done ever has been wrong. Do something better and different.
It's people have made this analogy. It's one of my favorite Seinfeld moments when George Costanza comes out and says, "Every instinct I do is wrong. Something to wear, something to eat. It's all been wrong. So you just do the opposite. Everything you think, do the opposite." Hi, I'm George Costanza. I'm 40 years old and I live with my parents and I'm unemployed. And he gets the girl. So do be like George. Just whatever you think, do the opposite. Be like George Costanza, not George McCaskey. Even though it is ironic because George Costanza is also a massive loser, but hey, he worked his way up to the New York Yankees and they won a World Series. So there you go.
Can't stand ya. Can't stand ya.
Black bean teeth.
So yeah, it's going to be, these next 4 weeks are going to be interesting. And then that coaching cycle, you know, it's very likely that it's going to be a while before we can even interview Ben Johnson because of the rules, and the Lions are expected to, you know, go deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably go to the Super Bowl at this rate, so.
And I don't want the Bears to rush, because I don't think there's a need to rush. I think there's a need to get this right. And it's, if there's a name that you want and you make it clear that you like them, I don't think you have to worry about somebody running and undercutting you. I don't think that's the way it works. You present, you know, what your situation is. Listen, we've got a young quarterback on a rookie contract that's looking really good. We've got, you know, two wide receivers that are really good. We've got a really good tight end. We've got some good cornerbacks and some good linebackers. And we've got potentially $100 million in cap room. We've got a top 10 pick and two top 10 picks in the second round in draft capital. Like, we can completely overhaul this roster this time, in a historic franchise in one of the best cities in the world. Like, you've got a lot to offer. It's so you don't have to rush and just hire the first person. And I don't want George interviewing them at all, whoever it is.
No, unless, no, God, no.
Unless it's the Ben Johnson, like, yeah, I want ownership to face the music and have their coming to God moment with me, explaining why they messed up. And I think that'd be good for George. I think that'd be really good for George to just be like, "Hi, my name is Georgie, and I make decisions with purple crayon. I'm now going to use a black pen like an adult, and I promise no more crayons. Except when I'm at Denny's, which I go to every Saturday morning."
He's filling in his Denny's menu with purple crayon as he's eating Flappy Jacks.
When he goes to Denny's, they've just got the red, blue, and yellow crayons, and he's like, "Excuse me, waiter, garçon, do you have a purple crayon? I am quite fond of purple crayons."
And it's just some like 16-year-old kid working a job like during break or something, and he's just
I
like,
don't know.
Mr. Manager, do we have purple grass? He's like that nerdy kid from The Simpsons. That
This old man is asking me for a purple crayon.
this guy in a suit with his old mother. Mr. Veruca, help. Sir, you need another kid's menu.
It's like, garçon, garçon, I need another menu. I messed up the puzzle on this one.
It's the freaking maze. It's hitting all the dead ends.
I keep hitting the same dead end, and I don't know why.
An episode of The Simpsons of that too. Homer's trying to fill out the maze. Don't, sir. You need another kid's menu, please.
Simpsons did it.
Simpsons
Simpsons did it.
did it. Simpsons did it.
I'm just so done with the McCaskies. Like,
I've been done with them.
I just pray that they get sold when the old lady dies.
I think it's a dream that they're going to sell the team, but
Well, I think they're gonna have to sell another portion of it.
oh yeah, I mean, yeah.
Maybe that brings in somebody that just forces change. And it's like, no, listen, I'm part owner of this team too. You've got to listen to me.
That would be nice. Just some sane voice in there.
Hank Scorpio.
Hammocks. Why didn't I think of that before? Want some cream? No. You know what I'm doing right now on my phone? I'm literally Googling Georgie Porgy. Georgie Porgy is a popular English language nursery rhyme. I thought it was just a character from Babes in Toyland. Let's see. Original lyrics were Georgie Porgy pudding and pie kissed the girls and made them cry when the girls came out to play. Georgie Porgy ran away.
Oh, yeah.
Georgie Porgy pudding and pie, running the Bears, he makes fans cry. When the boys come out to play, Georgie Porgy ran away. Oh my goodness. Wait, so I'm looking up like. So Georgie Porgy is about a kid that goes around kissing other girls and makes them upset? What the hell? Kind of fucked up shit is this? Oh wait, it's old European. It's all fucked up shit. I mean,
Georgie Porgy Purple Crayon, let the floose pick the grass in the lawn.
hey, that is the one good thing Floose did. He
he
fixed the
fixed
lawn.
he fixed the grass.
Cairo
Oh,
Santos acknowledged that.
it's funny. It's like they were like, oh, your coach got fired. Do you have anything nice to say? Yeah, he fixed the grass.
Yeah, grass is pretty good.
It's the only nice thing anybody's said after Floose was fired. That's how you know how much he was hated in that building. Everyone was just
Yeah.
like, oh my God, thank God I don't have to listen to those stupid nicknames anymore.
I'm just looking up Georgie Porgy on images. This is really fucked up. This kid goes around making girls cry by just going up and kissing them. That's so weird and gross. And then I see a logo for a local burger place called Georgie Porgy's Burgers and Custard. See, I remember seeing a really bad like version of Babes in Toyland with Drew Barrymore once as a kid and Mr. Miyagi, and frickin' one of the characters was named Georgie Porgy.
Georgie Porgy.
Georgie Porgy Babes in Toyland. Because that's what I picture, like, George McCaskey being. Like just being like, oh my God, I found it. Oh my God. Okay, I need to send you this picture and I need you to react because you are going to freaking laugh your ass off. Okay, hold on. I'm sending this to you right now. I'm going to send you Georgie Porgy. And just picture George McCaskey dressing up like this. Texting you now. See, this is where if our viewers could see this, you would probably laugh your butt off too. Okay, here it comes.
Oh my God. I
Look
just
at that.
if
Look at that
I
hat.
Photoshop incoming. I'm gonna Photoshop that costume on George sitting there with his brothers outside the press conference.
Yes. Yes. See, that's what I picture when I hear Georgie Porgy.
Georgie Porgy. Oh my God. But the Floos wasn't the only head coach fired in town.
No, he was not.
So Luke Richardson was also fired. And I don't know. I think I don't I mean it was the I think that was the right decision too. But who is your next coach? Is Anders Sorensen is your interim, who you brought in from Rockford.
Well, I'm not sure it's the best choice, but
I mean, for the interim, I don't know. I don't know if it's the right choice or not, but I don't know who's going to be your full-time guy. But the one thing I can say about Anders Sorensen is that they've had more goals from the defenseman in the last in the his tenure, his short tenure, than you did like the rest of the season. Like your defensemen are getting involved.
Well, Alex Vlasic scored a goal in Sorensen's first game coached.
Yeah. But you and he's a he, they hired him in the Rockford spot to be a teacher. But I don't think that's who they need in Chicago. I think he just take that. I think I'd be irresponsible too. The last time you brought somebody from Rockford to be your head coach didn't work out so well. I think this is another one. I think you need somebody that has a higher ceiling.
Yeah, and I mean, going back to Richardson, here's my thought. It's not all his fault. We know this team isn't good or a contender yet. We weren't expecting a lot of wins, but it was a mess.
It was just yeah, I can't the results, like it's hard to blame him for losses. It's the way they were losing and the inconsistency and the frustration of your players and
The regression of Connor Bedard can't happen.
no, it cannot. Connor Bedard has to be just a great player. He has to be. And everything you do has to be in order to make that happen.
Yeah, and he's getting the assists, but he's not scoring the goals, and he's clearly frustrated with that. Sean, I don't know, did you see that I was at the game last Sunday against the Blue Jackets? They lost 6-3.
No.
So I was at the game last Sunday. I was with my dad. First of all, there were some seats available, let's just say that.
Yeah, I've heard that it's pretty empty in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Bill Wirtz era bad, but the 300 level, especially towards the end where the Blackhawks only shoot once. Like, I think that whole area was maybe half full. I think there was 16 or 17K there, so it's not like half empty, but there's noticeable empty seats there. But Let me tell you, that place sounded like a morgue. It was dead quiet. There was no energy whatsoever. And sitting there just watching the team in person, there's no chemistry there. The carelessness of the puck in their own end. You can be a team that doesn't have a lot of elite talent, but when you don't have elite fundamentals, that's a problem. And it was a lifeless, messy mishmash out there. And we've just seen no improvement. And I get it. Most of the prospects are a ways away. They're in Rockford, they're in college, they're in whatever league. Much of this roster is going to be turned over. We understand that. But for the Blackhawks to still be the worst team in hockey, and you're already seeing Anaheim and the Sharks picking up the pace quicker than you, while you're in a big market, you have to see some sort of progress, and you're just not seeing it. And that's why I think you had to make a change. And I don't have any disdain or dislike of Luke Richardson. I respect him very much. I think he seems like a great guy, but I don't think this was going anywhere. And in fact, I think it was getting worse. When you might not be a great team on paper, you shouldn't be this bad, in my opinion.
No, you should not be. You should not be.
And you know what else is sad? I just want to say this real quick, and I want to get your take on it. It's sad that this team has become pretty irrelevant again in the grand scheme of things.
Yes.
When Luke Richardson got fired, that was nothing more than a footnote in the Chicago sports lore. This was a team 10 years ago that was a dynasty in the talk of the town. And now your head coach getting fired is a footnote. They're in the grand scheme of Chicago sports. Yes, you still have some people that go to the games, but in the grand scheme of things, they're irrelevant right now. They just are. What's your take on that?
I mean, it's absolutely true. I don't know what else to say. It's they are becoming irrelevant, and Kyle Davidson has to be feeling the heat too.
Yeah.
And I, this next head coach, is, gotta be a successful one. And your options are either a retread head coach, and I don't know how I feel about that. I've heard some people just make like Quenneville's available. No,
That's not happening.
I don't. That he's not coming back here. He's not wanted back here. He would be just a disaster for this team.
There's no sense. It's not.
Is a guy that solely likes to work with veterans with a team that's going to be all youth. Nope, that's a terrible idea. And after everything that happened, nope.
Yeah, it's just that's not going to happen. It's like Bill Belichick. It's not even on the table.
The other option is assistant coach that has not had a head coaching opportunity at this point. But are they going to do that back-to-back times? Promoting one of their internal coaches, like Sorensen, which I hope not. Not anything against him. That's not who I want. And then I'm going to throw a name out there. Is Carl, the ho head coach of the University of Denver. He came in the University of Denver as the youngest coach in Division One hockey at like 28 years old. He has been one of the best coaches for the developing the best program in Division One, one of the best. Coaches the minors. He's had experience working with several of the young Blackhawks players, and he is one of the hot names in for the next cycle of head coaches. I think they could do worse.
Well, here's my whole thing with the next Blackhawks coach is what do we know about the NHL? It's the most unforgiving sport when it comes to coaches. So you have a lot of reputable coaches that get fired as soon as things stop working. And by the time this offseason comes, I'm curious to see if there's going to be any other notable names on the board because it's such a revolving door.
Here we go. David Carl is in his seventh season as the head coach for the University of Denver. He's led Denver to a 148, 62, and 16 overall record, including five NCAA tournament appearances, three Frozen Four berths, and the 2022 and 2020, 24 NCAA national championship in his first six campaigns behind the bench. So, six seasons, two national championships. Youngest head coach in NCAA Division I men's ice hockey, fourth youngest coach to win a division title, or I mean to D1 title. Has an almost 70 winning percentage. Head coach of the U.S. men's national juniors team, and led them to a sixth gold medal. He coached Ian Mitchell, Cole Gutman, and Aiden Thompson. And he also coached for the juniors team, Frank Nazer, Oliver Moore, Sam Renzel, and Gavin Hayes. So he's got some important institutional knowledge about the Blackhawks, next generation of players. And he has just been a juggernaut so far as young careers coach. I think that might be the thing. So you've got these young players bringing a young hotshot head coach. It's a big swing, but I like it better than a retread, than bringing in Bruce Boudreau.
I don't think Bruce Boudreau would be a good fit either at this point. Or Alain Vigneault or
I will say though that Bruce Boudreau just looks funny behind the bench.
I know.
He just this old big head.
Hey,
He's got to be like 70 years old at this point.
yeah, I was gonna say he's up there. What's
He looks like if Santa shaved his beard off.
He does kind of. He does kind of. Boy, I just think of all those coaches. I mean, from my childhood. Could you imagine if they brought in John Tortorella? What a
If
disaster that would be.
they bring in Mike Babcock or Torts, I'm
Oh.
done. Done. Torts is funny. Like I like his press conferences because he will just say some wild shit, but I do not want him anywhere near the Blackhawks and their young players.
Well, see, that's the thing. You can kind of respect and like some of the stuff that Torts does when he's not on your team. Boy, who's the other one you mentioned?
Mike Babcock.
Oh, God. I don't think he's ever going to get a head coaching job again.
Probably not.
And you know what's a shame? He's a really good hockey mind, but he's such a piece of garbage to his players. Like, you've heard the stories, right?
Oh, yeah.
There was one player in particular that had an awful relationship with him, and he came public with it. Oh, who was it? Let me look that up because I remember he did like podcasts and he like tweeted and stuff about Mike Babcock. But because his downfall was when he went to Toronto. And you remember he signed that big deal with Toronto, and then he got fired like after a while. So Mike Babcock, Yeah, let's see if I
Here's
can.
one. When Mitch Marner was a rookie, he made him rank his teammates' effort levels from best to worst. And Marner was under the impression that it was confidential, but Babcock revealed the list to the team.
Oh, I think that's who I was thinking of. It was Mitch
What a
Marner.
dick move.
Oh, I totally forgot about this. Remember when the Blue Jackets, like last year, hired him to be their coach? And then more of the stuff came out. And then that obviously didn't go through.
Chris Chelios said Babcock was abusive to him. Johan Franzen said Babcock is the worst person he's ever met.
Oh, you know who I was thinking of? It was Mike Commodore. I knew he was a former Hawk.
Yeah, Mike Commodore called Mike Babcock a terrible human being in a multiple tweet thread.
That's right. It was Mike Commodore. Oh, and here's something interesting. I didn't realize this. Babcock has been criticized for mistreating both veteran and rookies alike. He has been accused of scratching players ahead of personal significance, such as removing Mike Modano from the lineup before his 1500th game. Mike Modano. You did that to Mike Modano. Oh, also, he benched Chelios for the Winter Classic against the Blackhawks in 09.
You know what? When he pulled Modano from that game, he told him, you came here to win a cup, not play 1500 games.
The fuck does that even mean? Yeah, so his coaching career in the NHL is done.
The assistants had said something, and he was well aware of it, and it made it clear that he didn't bring me there to play 1500 games. He brought me there to win a cup. When he told me that, I couldn't believe it. There was 4 games left in the season.
Wow.
Chelios called the move incredibly disrespectful and said that Babcock made personnel decisions just to show that he's the boss.
Wow. Awful.
Sean Avery slash Babcock's tires.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
That doesn't surprise me on either part that it was done to Babcock or that Avery did it.
Yeah, Sean Avery. Wasn't he kicked out of the league?
I don't know. Didn't he go on to try? Didn't he want to go to like Parsons or something to be a fashion designer?
Oh, maybe. I remember a time, I believe it was Sean Avery. I think it was Tim Thomas. You remember the Boston goalie Tim Thomas? I think it was during a warm-up, like he skated behind Tim Thomas and like whacked him on the back of his head with his stick. And then Tim Thomas just lost it and like dropped his gloves and fought him during warm-ups. I believe it was either Tim Thomas or, well, I know him and Belfour, or not Belfour, Brodeur used to go at it in game, but I believe that incident was with Tim Thomas.
Here we go. Sean Avery. In April 2008, it was announced that Avery would spend the summer off-season interning at Vogue magazine. In June 2008, Avery guest edited mensvogue.com, the website for Men's Vogue magazine, his interests mainly residing with women's fashion. Of men's fashion, Avery said, "You do suits and pants, and that's about that. Women's clothes tell a story. That's what's interesting to me." Yeah, he's a fashion guy.
Huh.
New Line Cinema put in development a film based on Avery's life.
Really?
Yes.
Sean Avery, really?
Yes. The guy who wrote Moneyball, the script for the movie,
So not the book, the screenplay.
he was hired to write the script.
Interesting.
In 2009, Avery worked with men's fashion label Commonwealth Utilities to present a clothing line for New York Fashion Week.
Huh. Didn't know that.
The more you know.
I just remember him being suspended a lot.
And a doucher.
Well, yes, he was a doucher and got suspended a lot. The two are linked.
God.
Man,
So
we went from the Blackhawks to Mike Babcock to Sean Avery. I love it. Next week, we're gonna talk about Brett Sopel. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about Barry Trotz, and then just to spice things up, we'll talk about RJ Umberger and his days as captain with the Blue Jackets.
But yeah, we could talk Bulls a little bit. They're not good. They're not a good team, and they Vooch has had a pretty good season so far,
Trade
but
him.
I would love to trade him. They're not good. And are they going to be the next team to fire their head coach? Which
Well,
would make Craig Council the most tenured head coach in all of Chicago professional sports
did you
at
see the graphic CHGO posted?
yes.
Ugh. A sad joke.
But I do like Matas.
I do too.
Josh Giddey has not played well. He started off hot. He has not played so well. Vooch has played pretty well. They've got some players that play well. This team is just a defensive disaster.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are games where they score 120, 530 almost, and they give up 140.
I mean, you look at today, Zach LaVine minus 13, Ayo Dosunmu minus 16, Vooch minus 13.
You let a train wreck 76ers team come into your building and beat you.
Yes, they're a terrible team. Horton Tucker was a minus 18, Phillips was a minus 8. Boozer
Bleh,
Bouzalis was the
bleh.
only one that was plus double digits.
Let him play, man. Just let him play.
That's what I want. Just let him play. And yeah, this team. But Embiid comes in there, plays his once a week game, drops 31 points on you. You lose to Indiana, and Indiana's not good either. They drop 132 on you.
That was also at home, wasn't it?
I believe so. And there, Giddey is a minus 10, Vooch minus 9, LaVine minus 8, Phillips minus 10, Horton Tucker minus 8. Like,
Bleh.
this point, let Matas play. Let him cook. Let him play. Let the kid play.
And get what you can for LaVine and Vooch. And Coby White's cooled off too.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they need a new head coach. And I'm not saying Billy's a bad coach. It's just I just this team is poorly put together, and I don't know what his plan is.
Well, that's the thing. What's the end game here? That's what bugs me. What is your end game?
It's to be good enough that you don't get a lottery pick, bad enough where you don't have to be expensive to win games.
So, where we've been the past 20 years since Jordan left?
Pretty much, yeah.
Man.
But the other night, against a halfway decent San Antonio team, you looked really good.
Wasn't half a San, well, wasn't Weren't they all hurt?
Yeah.
Wasn't Wemby hurt and like everybody?
Wemby didn't play. Like,
So
but you still dropped 139 points on him.
cool.
Vooch 39. Like you played well. It just, but then, you back at it. Let's see, where are they at? Tankathon.com. We can track all of our teams over on Tankathon. If the season were to end right now, the Bulls would have the eighth best odds for the number one overall pick. And
Yay.
getting Cooper Flagg. Should we talk about the Cubbies and the White Sox?
I suppose. You know what I'm doing right now? Feverishly refreshing Twitter to see if Juan Soto has made his decision because there's all these talks saying that he's going to sign tonight. So, waiting to see. But we know one thing.
It won't be with the
Ain't.
Cubs or the
Well,
Sox.
no, won't be here. Won't be here. Despite Ken Rosenthal publicly clowning the Ricketts for not even being in on
It's
them.
it is sad. And I keep hearing all these pitchers that the Cubs are being linked to. And I get you need pitching to win, but you need to score runs. You don't have power. And you're talking about trading either Bellinger or Suzuki. And like, where are you getting your power from? Who's
They
hitting home runs?
think that Owen Casey or Matt Shaw, and they might, but we don't know.
We don't know.
There's also this rumor, speaking of both the Cubs and the Sox, there's been a lot of rumblings about a possible crochet trade within the city where the Cubs, they give up some big prospect capital to the White Sox for Garrett Crochet. Those rumors have kind of swirled around. There was a rumor that there were discussions between the Sox, the Cubs, and the Mariners for a three-team deal. Obviously, we know what the goal for each team would be. I don't know if that's ever really going to come to fruition, but obviously, if the Sox are not going to keep Crochet, they're going to want a bundle of position prospects. The Cubs have those. You have Matt Shaw, you have Kevin Alcantara, you have Owen Casey. But I don't want the Cubs to necessarily drain their farm for Garrett Crochet, though I don't want to just not entertain the idea of Crochet either. I mean, to me, Matt Shaw is the untouchable guy. If you do trade a James Triantos or a Kevin Alcantara for someone like that, okay, I could do that, but really don't want to trade Matt Shaw. And rightfully so, the White Sox are going to be asking Keegs Ransom for him, as you would expect.
Yeah, Gary and I were having this. Cubs fans are like, oh, they should only give up, these low-level prospects. And I'm like, I've seen White Sox fans wanting two of the top five Cubs prospects plus in a lottery pick. And that's a ridiculous. But I'm definitely having talks because that would be a nice arm to have. And the
Oh,
guy's
yes,
a
absolutely.
flamethrower. He's a flamethrower, and the Cubs could use that in there.
Yeah, a guy who misses bats.
That would be nice to sandwich him in into that roster, into that rotation. But you've got to be smart here because you've got to trade some of those prospects. They're not all coming.
Correct.
You've got to be very smart, though, and so selectively trade the ones that you're the least hopeful about to get the most, MLB ready players that you can.
Right.
And that's why knowing your farm system is so important. And I don't know the farm system well enough to say who I'm married to who I'm not. I do not want to get rid of Matt Shaw. I do not want to trade PCA at this point. I don't think PCA, I'm as high on him as I was before he came up, but I'm excited enough about him that I don't want him traded unless we're getting something really big. I don't know if I want to trade Owen Casey, but I agree with you on like Triantos. Let me just go through.
Triantos, Alcantara. I mean, there's just a reality that you can't keep all these guys.
Yeah, let's see. I'm looking at the prospects. So Sean Casey, I don't want to. Cade Horton, no. I mean, he's got to be close to coming up.
Hopefully. I mean, he was hurt for a chunk of last year, so.
Triantos, I would be okay with. Alcantara, probably. What about Ballesteros?
It depends on what you do at catcher. You got to find a replacement, and several catching guys who you could have had are already off the board.
Yeah.
But can you trust them to catch in the major leagues right now? I don't know.
I don't know either because if you're a catcher slash something, that means they like you for your bat.
Right.
I'm fine being aggressive in trading your prospects when you're close. When you are like on the cusp and you're making a run, I'm fine being aggressive. But when you're a team that just doesn't want to spend into the luxury tax and free agency, and then I'm not okay with being aggressive trading prospects. I think that's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, I just don't know what's going to happen here. I think they're going to try to make a number of flurry of moves via the trade and small mid-level moves, because I think, I think they just want to get that Bellinger pay off the books so they can make other moves. But you do have to be sure you're able to supplement the hole that he leaves with legitimate production. So how they do that, it's kind of a mystery to me right now.
So I think it would be dumb to trade Seiya Suzuki at this point.
I don't think they will. I legitimately don't think they will.
And what is Bellinger going to get you in return? Who is even a good trade partner?
I don't even think it's about the return. I think it's about the financial flexibility.
I
Which I
mean,
don't like that. I'm just saying, I think that's what it is.
so you're saying that you think Jed signed Bellinger, assuming that he would just opt out after the year and then.
He either assumed he was going to opt out, or they were confident that he was going to continue to put up the numbers he put in 2023.
And neither of those happened.
Correct. Which, in its own way, would be him opting out. Because if he was like 2023, then he probably would opt out.
Yeah. I don't know. They've got to get a big bat.
And I
I
mean,
don't know.
listen, if you keep Bellinger, he can do what he did in 23. I just don't know if he will.
I don't. I would actually like them to keep him. I think he gives you flexibility because of his versatility.
Right.
You can put him at DH, first base, and all three outfield spots. And so you can move him around, and he is not a disaster at any of those positions. He's a perfectly fine first baseman, and he's an exceptional outfielder in all three spots.
Right.
So I like that. I like that flexibility. You don't have that flexibility with Seiya, even though I'm more confident in Seiya's bat. I would like them to, but Bellinger's bat is a nice bat to have. Especially being a lefty with pop, they just need to add on top of that. And if you are, it's Shaw and Casey that are you're hanging your hat on, I think that's silly because how do you hang your hat on rookies coming in to save your seat, save your job, save your team?
It's a big gamble.
It's a huge gamble. That's a big gamble. And, it's a tough one for fans to swallow. because, you know, you could have a really good rotation next year and you're going to lose a bunch of games because you can't hit.
Right.
It's just really annoying.
Yep. It is.
And I'm going to be annoyed if that Asian pitcher goes to Los Angeles and Juan Soto does too.
Huh. Could you imagine?
It's
I want Roki Sasaki so bad, but I'm not getting my hopes up.
I would like him to. He's probably going to the Dodgers. And then watch Juan Soto go there too. And then it won't matter what we do because we will just be getting our asses kicked by the Dodgers for the next several years.
Yep.
And apparently the Yankees have talked to the Cubs about Cody Bellinger, which means that they must feel that that there's a chance that Juan Soto leaves.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a bidding. It could be a New York bidding war between the Mets and the Yankees. And by the time you're listening to this show, he probably will have made his decision by then. There's a lot of rumors saying it's going to come tonight. But then again, you never know. You never know.
I can hear you refreshing.
Yeah. Refresh, refresh. Click, click, click.
That'd be funny if Soto didn't sign until like February.
Oh,
We're all
that
just
would
refreshing until then.
just endlessly. It's been 3 months.
Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope, I think I've said my piece.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That will grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter/X, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And you should buy some of his paintings because they are really good and it will make your walls happy to hang them up on there. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The Cubs to win.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the bears go bearing down, I wanna...